The topic of this class today is not suitable for one with flu. I reckon it does my head in today's
Wonderful,
one.
thank you, Caroline. My mind is clear, but my body's hot and, got the infection on the chest and things.
Very
But my
good.
lung's okay.
We'll
Thank
look
you.
forward to your explanations.
Yes, well, I only found one this morning.
All
I
right.
looked, I gave an answer, and I go, oh, I don't know about that. And I have to, let you guys know I don't know about this one. And this morning I just decided to read the next teaching, and there it was. So I went, okay, great. That'll
Good.
help,
Thank you, Eddie.
So what's your time, anybody?
10:04.
After 10. Okay, thank you, Sue. I've still got before 10, but thank you. Okay, well, let's begin. So, like normal, we'll set our motivation, we'll set the visualization, say some prayers, and then we'll begin the actual class. So please just get comfortable in your seat. Make sure your shoulders are relaxed and your back is straight. If your head is sitting evenly upon your neck, the head is facing straight forward, but your eyes could be gazing downwards or closed. And you let your body breathe itself. And while the body breathes itself, relax into the awareness. And imagine that the ground beneath you is made of lapis lazuli light. It's completely pure and open. And the space above you is filled with offerings and rainbows. And within the offering-filled rainbow sky appears a throne. And sitting upon it is the Buddha. And he's surrounded by the lineage lamas, the bodhisattvas, all enlightened beings, while you yourself are surrounded by all sentient beings. You recollect that you are fortunate to be alive, that you have good health, and that you have the leisure and opportunity to attain any of your spiritual goals. But you need to act quickly. Things do not exist as they seem to. But while things are not quite right, you have met a spiritual friend who is leading you in the safe direction of the three rare sublime ones. You wish to take refuge in the three rare sublime ones. And not just for your sake, but for the sake of all sentient beings. Thinking that by relying upon them, you can develop the full state of Buddhahood, thereby accomplishing your purpose and the purpose of others. So make the practice as purely as you can. Imagine yourself to be as clear as a deity. You're holding a vajra and bell. You want to make this practice purely for the benefit of all sentient beings. And so you say, I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. So in response to this aspiration of ours, think that lights and nectars pour down from the heart of each refuge being. And they purify negative karmas and obstructions, increase your lifespan and health, along with your virtues and Dharma realizations. These nectars and lights cleanse not just yourself, but all beings surrounding you. So cleansed by wisdom, fortified with love, recollect the four immeasurable thoughts. And then decide to develop these yourself to establish all beings in those four immeasurable states. To confirm the aspiration, join me in saying, may all sentient beings have happiness and its causes. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and its causes. May all sentient beings never be separated from the happiness that is without suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from the bias of attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. In response to this aspiration of ours, from the heart of each refuge being, lights and nectar stream down. And these dissolve into oneself and the surrounding sentient beings. So negative karmas and obstructions are purified. Our health and lifespans are increased, along with our virtues and Dharma realizations. So we relax a little more, and then invite the field for accumulating merit to appear. And they do. And in their presence we say, reverently I prostrate with my body, speech and mind. I present clouds of every type of offering, actual and imagined. I declare all my negative actions accumulated since beginningless time and rejoice in the merit of all holy and ordinary beings. Please remain until the end of cyclic existence and turn the wheel of Dharma for living beings. I dedicate my own and others' merits to the great enlightenment. So to prevent ourselves clinging to the purified state and the accumulated merit, we imagine that our body, our merits, and everything that we hold joyful is utterly transformed into a pure land. And we offer this new pure land to the Buddha as Lama Tsongkhapa and the entourage. And we say, this ground, anointed with perfume, strewn with flowers, adorned with Mount Meru, four continents, the sun and the moon, I imagine this as a Buddha field and offer it. May all living beings enjoy this pure land. Idam Guru Ratna Mandala Kanayatayami. We've released the offering and it's been accepted by Guru Lama Tsongkhapa as the Buddha in nature. We request our blessings from the Guru, which now pour down upon us. And whatever wrong minds we might have, they vanish completely. And in their place arises the purity of the mind and all of its blessings. We recollect the three principal aspects of the path. And then from the heart of the Lama, infinite light rays emanate, reaching all environments and all beings. We which dissolve into light and gather into the field of merit. And the field of merit dissolves into the central figure of Lama Tsongkhapa, who now diminishes in size and enters your crown and descends to your heart. His mind and your mind become of one nature. And within that nature, you hear the sound of the mantra. And you recite it. Om A Guru Vajradhara Sumati Keti Siddhi Hum. 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 Sumati Keti Siddhi Hum. Om A Guru Vajradhara Sumati Keti Siddhi Hum. Now from your heart, rays of light fill the 10 directions of space. And wherever sentient beings abide within space, they're utterly transformed into a fully awakened state. And the life rays withdraw and they re-enter your heart. You can feel your body breathing itself. And you know that this meditation was one of imagination, but this imaginative process has imprinted the mind with the possibility of this full awakening. I think this is what you'd really like to do. You really want to develop your wisdom and your compassion and your abilities to bring about enlightenment for yourself, for the benefit of all sentient beings. I think it's for this purpose that we're studying Lama Tsongkhapa's Lama Rinchenpo. Then breathing in through your nostrils, exhale, and in your own time, just let your eyes open. Okay. So this is, we're only doing like 13 questions today, but some of them are a little tricky. And the topics for these 13 questions, we're looking at objects of inaccurate and accurate consciousness. And these differ, of course, between the middle way autonomists and middle way consequentialists. A question arises, do commonly appearing subjects exist between these two tenant systems, the middle way autonomy and middle way consequence? And finally, there are three modes of apprehension, in other words, three ways to know an object. So we'll look at this material and try to answer the questions best we can. So the first part, the object of inaccurate consciousness, we've got about four or five questions on this topic here. So let's go for those first. So our first question is, how do middle way consequences define accurate consciousness and what are its objects, and inaccurate consciousness and what are its objects? So Bruce, would you like to have a go at the first one? Middle way consequences, now it's accurate consciousness. What are the objects of an accurate consciousness for a middle way consequentialist?
Objects are the things that don't exist from their own side. And the accurate consciousness is something that doesn't reify on something that is unreal.
Okay, that's a nice way of saying it. Chris?
Eddie, I was away, so I was catching up on this, but I just... So accurate refers to non-mistaken consciousness of only noble beings who directly perceive reality process. So the object is not rarefied. Yeah, so it's the object that is not rarefied, I would say, is the object. Eddie.
Okay, great. And Caroline?
I had that the accurate consciousness is only found in the in an aria being in meditative equipoise on emptiness, and the object is ultimate reality.
Oh, very nice. Very nice. Suzanne, do you have anything to say, Sue?
Much the same, Eddie, as
Okay,
Carolyn's.
that's great. So those are good answers. They're all good answers and they're all correct. Right? So, yeah, this is exactly what you guys have all said. But I think you've said it really nicely too, right? In a way that's comprehensible to yourselves, right? What about the inaccurate consciousness? Would you like to try with that one, Sue? So what is an inaccurate consciousness, first of all?
It's a conventional consciousness that are mistaken due to being affected by ignorance.
Fantastic, that's right. Okay, so you just stop there, Sue. And Bruce, what would be the objects of this inaccurate consciousness?
Just the apparent existence of phenomena.
Yeah, Chris, that's right, Chris.
Yeah, I just said it takes objects of what is non-existent as existent.
Okay, so what are those objects? Caroline. you've got your little thing on, Caroline, you've got your speech thing.
All right. I said they were the inaccurate consciousness is a sensory consciousness that sees innate existence in form, sound, smell, taste, touch.
Okay. Yeah, so briefly, it's inaccurate ones are conventional consciousness affected by ignorance, and their objects are conventional appearances. So any object of the senses, and seeing that these objects have an intrinsic nature or inherent existence. Okay, now comes the second one. They ask this question, so how do the Middle-way autonomists differ in their assertions on this? So I just set it up in the same way, right? This is what I did. I just said, okay, so what they differ, but what's the difference in terms of the accurate consciousness? What do they say? What's an accurate consciousness for a middle way autonomous? Bruce?
Objects established by valid cognitions.
Yep, and what's appearing to that valid cognition?
Things that exist from their own aside, the conventional things
Have
are
their own
actually
character or
existent.
exist from their own side or inherently existent. That's right. So that's sort of opposite of that, of this one here, isn't it?
So, Eddie, I also had that it was based on something we said last week, that autonomous still say things arise, dependent arisings.
Yeah.
So is it that, a valid cognition that establishes phenomenon as dependent, inherently existent, but still dependent arising?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that'll be fine too. So
Right.
they are the major thing here is that these objects are non-mistaken or valid cognizer, like Bruce said, they apprehend phenomena existing from their own side or by way of their own character or intrinsically. And these phenomena, like you say, Carolyn, they dependently arise. So is that okay with everybody? So what you can see here is that, and like you say, their object is conventionalities. It's the opposite of this top one here. So let's have a look there. So I'll put this one up first. So it's a non-mistaken consciousness apprehends its own character, and the object is conventionalities. But then I'll put this other one about what would be inaccurate for this type of consciousness?
Consciousness is not a mistake in respect to mixing the object with its generic image in the case of inference, or things that have discrepancies like a hair falling in the eye, like there's some fault.
Yeah, that's a good one, sir. That's right. Yeah. Anybody else? What would be inaccurate for these guys? So the last one, Sue said, does everybody understand what that means there? Is something actually wrong with your conventional cognizer? Yeah, like you said, so you might see that things have cracks in them or something like that, or lines in them. But that would mean there's something actually wrong with your eye. You know, so that'd be an inaccurate consciousness. That's not a valid consciousness. Or like they often give the example of seeing a white snow mountain is blue. And so that would be an inaccurate valid consciousness. An inaccurate, it's not valid, it's inaccurate.
Yeah, Eddie, my me being colorblind would probably fall under that definition.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And that would the object there would be conventionalities, wouldn't they? So that would be one that
yes,
like they would all agree with, right? But there's another one too in terms of inaccurate. So this answer here I've got up here, I tried to change it because I'm not quite happy with it. But we'll put it up and then I'll just tell you what I changed it to. So this is what I put up, but actually what it should say is it would be an inaccurate consciousness if there was no commonly appearing subject in a debate syllogism. Do you understand that? Does that make sense to you? Because their thing is, isn't it? It's like, that's what it's about. You look at, when that debate syllogism was put out, everybody is in agreement. Because phenomena do appear to exist from their own side. And they're saying, it's a valid consciousness that gets at that. Right? So when you write up a syllogism, the subject has its own character. It exists from its own side. And now if it did not have that, it would be inaccurate. Now the middle way consequence school says, they say it is inaccurate, right? But these guys are saying, it's like they say, these two guys, middle way autonomy and middle way consequence, just got opposite ways of looking at things. So for these two systems, there is no commonly appearing subject in a syllogism. Is that clear to everybody? In debate, there's no commonly appearing subject, is there? Right? Because one side is saying these phenomena inherently exist, and that's valid. The other side is saying they don't exist inherently. So we're not talking about the same thing here. Our ideas of valid cognition are completely different. Remember, this last time, middleway consequence for them, valid cognitions are only in the mind of an Arya being. In their mind, their object is emptiness. These guys are saying this, and it's mere phenomena. It should not be mere phenomena, like in the middleway consequence, but conventionalities. You know, I did change this, and then I put it back up here. I'm looking at going, somehow or other I changed the wrong slide or whatever, but it's not there. So I wanted it to be clearer. So like I said, it would be inaccurate from the middle way autonomous point of view is if there's no commonly appearing subject in the debate syllogism. What are the objects that they're talking about? Well, conventionalities which actually exist inherently existent objects. Yeah, so this writing here, just please, the bottom line, you just have to ignore that. And I just sort of change it around a bit up the top because I think it's better to say it that way. So is this okay for you guys? Do you sort of understand what I'm trying to say here? Now, I only got this because I read the next teaching. Right? And I went, oh, there it is. There's the answer. So I had to... You know, I tried this one. I thought, I'll tell you first the warning here, right? I'm not sure of this at all. But the next teaching tells you this answer. And so that's why I changed it. Okay, so this, our next question is, explain the meaning of non-mistaken consciousnesses do not apprehend form, sound, and similar objects. Chris, would you like to have a go at that one?
Yes, because a Arya being in their meditative equipoise on emptiness would not actually see the object itself. So there could be no common subject, because the middleway autonomous would actually conventionally see the object. So the one person would view emptiness, so they would see the actual object as empty and would not see its physical form, for example, whereas the middleway autonomous would see the physical form and says it exists from intrinsically from its own side.
Yeah, well, I don't know about that, Chris. Not the second part, but in terms of the debate syllogisms, they would just leave it. It's got to be there, you know. But from this meaning here, it's saying the meaning of a non-mistaken consciousness is do not apprehend form, sound, and similar objects. So you're quite right. The non-mistaken consciousnesses here are ones taken from the point of the middle way consequence system, aren't they? Valid cognizers.
Correct, yes.
Yeah. And of course, these valid cognizers are only within the mental continuum of an Arya being who's focused on meditative equipoise is focused on emptiness.
Yes.
And emptiness is an ultimate truth, it's an ultimate thing. So, yeah, these conventionalities like form, sounds, and all those other things, they're not going to appear at that time, because these are conventional truths. And the Arya beings, meditative equipoise, is focused on the ultimate truth as emptiness. Because this is the only sort of non-mistaken consciousness from a middle way consequence point of view. So, Caroline, you'd like to say something?
I'm just a bit confused, Eddie. Did we do question four? Because I thought question four and five were pretty similar.
Well, perhaps they are. So what does question four say?
Well, that was explain the meaning of objects that appear to mistaken consciousnesses are not found by non-mistaken consciousnesses.
Yeah, well, this is the same question. I just turned it around, made it easier to, to get
it. Oh, right. And five is the meaning of a non-mistaken consciousness do not apprehend form, sound, and similar objects.
Jesus, hey, you're right. So somehow Mickey's missed out pages three and four for me. Jesus, or I've done something funny. So there you go. I was just saying before, the flu had not affected my mind, but apparently it has. Yeah, so these questions are all sort of related, Caroline.
Yeah,
I just broken it up a bit.
Yeah.
Sorry. Okay, so I've got to say this again. Okay, so no commonly appearing subject, right? The question is, why do middleway consequences argue that a commonly appearing subject cannot exist for both the proponent, a consequentialist, and the opponent, the autonomous? Is that the right question I should be asking?
Yeah, that's
number three.
That's right. Excellent. Thank you. I turned two pages over, went to five. And then blame Miffy for missing them out. But I am a sicko today.
Yeah.
Okay, so what's the answer here? Sorry. Caroline, you go first.
Right. So I said that the autonomous, you know, were advocates of inherent existence of object and the subject object, and that the consequentialists are advocates of non-inherent existence, and therefore you can't then ever agree on what the nature of the subject is.
Yep, that's correct. That's a good way of saying it. Chris, would you like to say anything about this or add anything to it? It's question three.
Yeah, no, Eddie, my answer I gave was for question three.
Yeah.
And that was just basically, you know, there's no common subject because the actual middle way consequence sees the actual appearance of a subject that lacks inherent existence. And they generally, if it's accurate, they would be in meditative equipoise, so they would not actually see the subject. Whereas the autonomous state, the object intrinsically exists, and they are dealing at the conventional level.
Yeah, that's a good way. That's good. You got your head around it. That's good. Bruce.
Consequences can't accept that an object with an essentialist definition exists.
Yep, that's right. That's right. And Sue?
Nothing different, Eddie.
Okay, that's it. Yeah, so there's some major differences here between the autonomy and consequence, isn't there? There's two major disagreements, really. So they disagree about the valid cognition, what valid cognitions are. So that's a big difference. One is saying it's valid just to apprehend conventionalities as inherently existing, and the other guy's going, valid cognitions only relate to emptiness. I can only be held by aryas in meditative equipoise. So there's no meeting there. And then there's the nature of the objects. The objects from the autonomous point of view are seen to exist by way of their own character, and from the middle way consequence position, they seem to exist in mere name. So again, major differences. So there's no way they can have a commonly appearing subject. Okay, so our next question is, explain the meaning of objects that appear to mistaken consciousnesses are not found by non-mistaken consciousnesses. Okay, Sue, would you like to have a go at this first?
Yeah, just to define again, mistaken consciousnesses are the conventional consciousnesses such as sensory perceptions, which are influenced by ignorance.
Yes.
And non-mistaken are the meditative equipoise single-pointedly focused on ultimate truth, on emptiness.
Yep. Yep.
And what happens is it gives way to an implication of them being mutually exclusive, that mistaken consciousnesses cannot access ultimate truths and non-mistaken consciousnesses do not react with conventional appearances.
Yeah, that's nice. Good, good, good. Okay, Bruce.
Mistaken consciousness is going to reify objects.
Right. Nice.
Whereas
that's right.
The non-mistaken won't and just see them as empty.
Yeah, great. That's it. Nice way of saying it. That's right. Mistaken consciousness reify the objects. Right? Where a non-mistaken would be the aryas meditative equipoise on emptiness, and there's no object going to appear at all, basically. And that's a non-mistaken, right? In terms of the... Yeah, you've got two different objects, basically. Chris, and two different valid cognizers.
Yeah, very similar. I just said that mistaken means that the objects appear to be real or rarefied or existing from their own side. And then the non-mistaken do not apprehend in intrinsic nature, and the object will not appear.
Excellent. That's it. So, Caroline, you're happy with these, or are you saying something similar?
Yes, sir. No, it was basically... You know, the aria in meditative equipoise is the only one for a non-mistaken consciousness,
excellent.
So everything else is mistaken.
That's it. Make it as nice and simple as that. That's the way. All conventional consciousnesses are mistaken.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So I take it, I know that you've got it, right? You all understand. Yeah, so again, I'm just saying exactly what you guys have said. So non-mistaken consciousness are those held by Arya beings and meditative equipoise on emptiness. When you're in that space, conventionalities are excluded. They cannot appear. Right? Sometimes they give us, there's a great example of this in a commentary on the Heart Sutra, where they talk of, in the Diamond Cutter Sutra, when they talk about phenomena being like stars, you know, they've got like stars, like a visual aberration, like a magician's illusion and stuff. They've got the nine metaphors. So when it's like, when you're looking at the stars, right, well, the stars appear at the night, the sun does not appear. Because your mind is on, you know, you're looking in the night time, right? So when you're looking in the dark at the stars, you don't see the sun, right? So it's the same here. When the meditator, when the sky's meditating on emptiness, the conventionalities don't appear. Okay, and then here we came to the spot I started off with. It says, explain the meaning of non-mistaken consciousnesses do not apprehend form, sound, and similar objects. So it's basically we're saying the same thing again and again, and just trying to confirm it within our awareness. That's all. So again, so Bruce, what's this mean? A non-mistaken consciousness don't apprehend things like forms and so forth.
If you see them as empty, the apparent form that you get through those sense consciousnesses aren't perceived as they appear.
Yeah, that's right. It's fine. So Chris.
Yeah, I'm not sure, Eddie, that sort of what they're after here, but I came up with just the non-mistaken consciousness do not rarefy or take as existent from their own side such things as form and sound, you know, and therefore they would not, on a conventional level, engage with the object.
Oh, okay. Caroline?
I go back to the Arya being in meditative equipoise and all they see in that is emptiness.
That's
and
right.
Therefore, you know, ultimate reality, and therefore they cannot see, because they're not Buddhas yet, the other forms of things and objects.
Yeah, that's it, right? That's what they're getting at here. Remember, the middle way consequence, the non-mistaken consciousnesses, is valid consciousness. It's always emptiness. It's always emptiness. And that's why when you're in emptiness, the forms can't appear. Emptiness is an ultimate truth. Conventional truths don't appear when the mind is resting on ultimate truths. It's impossible. What would happen? This is the thing, right? This does not happen, but what would happen? What would it mean? If you were an Arya being meditating on where the phenomena truly existed or empty of that true existence, if you're in that meditative equipoise and the forms were there, the forms appeared to you, what would that mean?
It would mean either you weren't properly in meditative equipoise or that you had become a Buddha and could see both at once.
Well, that was what I did think of. The second part.
It would mean they're findable under ultimate analysis.
Yes, that's what it would mean, right? Which means they ultimately exist. Because that's what you're looking for. Do these phenomena have the ultimate existence they appear to have? If you found them, that means they do have that, which means they intrinsically exist, they inherently exist, they ultimately exist. Conventionalities, I don't know what they would be, but they would have an ultimate truth.
My AI had something nice with this one, Eddie.
Uh-huh.
With the non-mistaken consciousnesses do not apprehend form, sound, and similar objects.
Yep.
It said, according to the middle way consequence ghoul, consciousnesses are classified based on their accuracy in perceiving reality. So a non-mistaken consciousnesses perceive reality without distortions of ignorance.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the inability of the non-mistaken consciousness to apprehend conventional objects reinforces the idea that ultimate truths, emptiness, and conventional truths are perceived by entirely different types of consciousness.
Okay. Excellent.
For practitioners, this principle principle emphasizes the transformative nature of realizing emptiness, where the mind transcends ordinary perceptions to focus solely on ultimate truth of phenomena, free from the illusions of inherent existence.
Yeah, So with our ordinary senses, we perceive ordinary phenomena, and those ordinary phenomena appear to have an existence that they don't have. That's what our ordinary consciousnesses do. So this is from the middle way consequence point of view, right? From the middle way autonomous point of view, they'd say, no, these ordinary consciousnesses are validly apprehending phenomena that exist by way of their own character. So when we go to actually investigate to see if these phenomena have own character, we find that they are empty of own character. And that experience, within that experience, the phenomena do not appear at all. But that's the difference. So it's like Sue's saying, there are two different types of awareness. One is using conventional cognizers, the others are what they call yogic perceivers, right? Because you're getting your mind and the mind, from an experiential point of view, this mind is a combination of calm abiding and special insight. Now, that's not, an ordinary cognizer. That's a very different type of mind. Anyway, that brings us to our first little break. So is there anything you'd like to ask about this material so far? Like I said to Caroline, some of the stuff is like they're asking three questions about the same phenomena, but just trying to get at it in different ways. So I think there's a way to reaffirm our understanding of what this section is about. So I suppose if you were to take something away from this, what might it be for you, Sue? This little section we've just gone through here. It's about these accurate and inaccurate types of consciousness, what they're apprehending.
Probably according to the middle way consequences school, that they're mutually exclusive, inaccurate and an inaccurate consciousness for an ordinary sentient being.
Okay, good. Bruce. It was one kernel, if you were to take one thing away from this, what might it be?
Yeah, I think that idea of mutual exclusivity is the basis of it, that they just can't agree on the basic.
Yeah, that's right.
Compare.
Yeah, yeah. It'd be like two people having an argument and, the one word is the same, but they're disagreeing on the meaning. So you can't really have a good discussion about when things are like that. Chris, one thing.
One thing is that the autonomists, or not accepting that an accurate consciousness is that of an Arya being in meditative equipoise, surprised me. Because you're basically comparing as accurate conventional consciousness with the Arya being's consciousness. And I'm surprised there's no acceptance of that.
I'm not sure if that would be quite right, Chris. So like I'm saying, what the arguments here are based on ideas, conceptions, right? Like what is valid? And then they would say, well, your senses are valid. They're getting at those objects. And then the middle way have this thing about valid and mistaken. So from the middle way consequence, it's valid in the sense of, form or color or whatever the objects are getting at, sure, we agree. But we disagree on their method of on their way of existing. These phenomena do not have the own character they seem to have. Right? And then they talk. So now they're going to have a debate, right? And it's on a debate thing. And like you say, what you're going to find, of course, is we can't have a debate because there's no commonly appearing object. We, like Bruce said, we disagree basically on the basic terms. So we can't have debates in a syllogism using the idea that the phenomena do exist by way of their own character. So when the middle way consequence have debates, they don't use that, they use consequence. That's why they call consequence, right? They would take these guys and then lead them into a, what would you call it, Sue? A fault, right? Where the person could see, oh my gosh. But like you say, when you go to the wisdom part, when you actually, if you had actually applied special insight and so forth, and both have agreement on what the object is, you'd come to the same conclusion. It's not like, in terms of the experience, when they do this, their meditative equipoise is going to find these ultimate truths. And so this level is basically on the level of convention, arguing through language and so forth. And so this is why it's so important for a middle way consequence. This is why correct conceptions are so important. Like, you know what they say, like correctly identifying the object to be negated. So they say, the middle way consequence would say, the middle way autonomous have not found the correct object to be negated, because they're saying conventionalities have inherent existence. It's only on the ultimate side that they don't. So from the ultimate side, they find exactly what the middle way consequences would. And so there's agreement there, Chris, on the ultimate truth side, right? But not on the conventionality side. Is that okay? Could you sort of get your head around that?
Oh, definitely. Thanks, Eddie. Yeah.
And Caroline, what would you, the most interesting or one thing you could take away?
For me, it's, you know, just how ultimate reality, until we're a Buddha, is only a area being in meditative equipoise on emptiness. So it really reinforces Geshe Sherab's point a few months ago about the importance of really understanding what conventional reality is, that it's, you know, it's a sort of the valid cognition but mistaken one that, you know, is how we exist in conventional reality, and how to try and, you know, do that. And, you know, when it comes up in those three points a bit later on, just how important, you know, understanding, you know, how we operate among those points. And
The ultimate truth depends upon conventional truths. You cannot have an ultimate truth without a conventional truth. And all things exist conventionally. There isn't anything that exists ultimately. So conventions are really, really important. And I think this is what Lama Tsongkhapa's genius was, to find a subtle conventionality, subtle conventional truth, meaning existing in mere name, you know, unfindable when searched for, this sort of thing. Anyway, let's have a little meditation then now, and be time for a little break. So please just get comfortable in your seats, let your shoulders drop down and relax. So release any tension that might be stored in the body with an exhalation. And then let your body breathe itself. Then relax into awareness and be fully engaged. You think that you want to become familiar with the nature of reality, to recognize it, especially the nature of the mind, for the benefit of all beings. We wish to discover both the conventional and ultimate natures of the mind for the benefit of yourself and all sentient beings. So first of all, if your eyes are closed, just open them for a moment. See what you see and then close them again. So visual consciousness appeared for the moment. How accurate does it apprehend reality? If you're unsure, just open your eyes again and then close them. When your eyes were open, it was a conventional reality. It appeared a reality that depended upon your eyes, the object that the eyes are apprehending, and a visual consciousness. But when you opened your eyes, the appearance just was there. This appearance have the appearance of own nature. When we believe it has a own nature or intrinsic nature, we begin the cycle of suffering. An accurate consciousness, a valid accurate consciousness from the middle way perspective position is like a mirror that reflects only pure light. While inaccurate consciousnesses are like dusty mirrors that distort the reflections. So the dusty mirror makes objects appear substantial and distinct. So the dusty mirror would make your visual appearance appear substantial and distinct. The clear light mirror reflects reality as it truly is, without falsely imposing an inherent or a substantial or distinct existence upon those objects. So I wonder how your own perceptions might change if you recognize that objects lack the true existence they seem to have. But then just opening your eyes again and just look at whatever's in front of you. Then close them. So these conventional appearances, these conventional minds, habitually solidify our experience. It seems as if what we see has its own character. When you open your eyes, don't colors have their own character? Don't the shapes seem to have their own character? Yet when your eyes close, this all vanishes. So I wonder what conventional appearances do you yourself most strongly believe to be intrinsically existent? Existing by way of their own character. So what conventional appearances do you most strongly grasp to have their own character? Does your sense of self seem to have its own character? Do other people seem to have their own character and exist in that way? And just like this is, yeah, we're just doing this gently and just being curious. Now, if you were to discover the emptiness of phenomena, this might be directly or indirectly through correct reasoning. Might that transform daily interactions? Just take one object and think that although this object appears to exist by way of its own character, what if it doesn't have own character? What if I found it does not exist by way of its own character? What would change for you? So in an hour or so, it'll be midday. See if you can practice after midday to recognize when your consciousnesses are accurate or inaccurate, just for an hour. And now just rest in the spaciousness of simply breathing. Letting the body breathe itself, and you're neither rejecting or grasping at what appears, you're just resting the mind. Now on the next exhalation, just let your eyes flutter open and bring your awareness back to your room and the screen. And now we're going to have like a 10-minute break, so please make yourself a cup of tea like I'm about to. Okay, so can you hear me okay? Am I back with sound? Okay, thank you everybody. So let's move on now to the next section. So this is a bit like what I think was you were saying, Bruce. You know? So this question asks, why do Chandrakirti and Lama Tsongkhapa assert that a subject cannot be commonly established by valid cognition? Sue, would you like to go first?
I think it basically comes down to the valid cognition that establishes a subject for the autonomist or the essentialist as not mistaken conventionally is unacceptable for the consequentialist. We see this as fundamentally flawed, and the discrepancy prevents a subject from being established by a shared valid cognition.
Yeah, that's it. Chris, would you like to say it in your way?
Yes, it means that when both the opponents of intrinsic existence and the essentialist posit visible form as the subject of a syllogism, non-mistaken perception as in noble beings do not establish it as appearing and common to both parties. Perceptual valid cognition that is non-mistaken with respect to an intrinsically characteristic appearing object could not be, you know, established commonly.
Okay. The thing is, do you understand it?
well. So yes, you know, if there's a pot in front of us,
okay,
right? There's a pot in front of us. So the consequentialist would say that we cannot get the basic common establishment of the pot because, firstly, the consequentialists would have that the accurate consciousness would be of a noble being who would not be able to actually view it because there would be an equipoise and would not see the pot, whereas the autonomous position is that the pot is in front of us and it exists conventionally from its own side.
Oh, that's great. That's nice. That's right. Good, good. That's right, good.
Yeah, I just said that cannot be commonly established, that what commonly established means is that, you know, conventionally existing subject, because they just sort of, you know, it's the whole thing of Arya being in meditative equipoise versus, you know, the consequentialists who, as Chris said, you know, believe in inherent existence, even though the inherent existence item is a dependent arising.
Okay, Bruce. Bruce, would you like to add a bit?
Yeah, I just had that accurate and inaccurate consciousnesses are by definition mutually exclusive.
Okay, so simply put, these two guys have fundamentally different understandings of what valid cognition is and the objects of that valid cognition. Right? They disagree what valid cognition, you know, like I said, they're fundamentally different, aren't they? Valid cognition for the middle way consequence means what? Anybody?
I'm mistaken, a free from consensuality?
Yep.
And it inherently exists. It inherently exists.
And this valid cognition is only on what's the object?
Conventional truths that inherently exist.
Okay, that's the middle way autonomous, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Sorry, are we talking? Yeah. Which one?
Yeah, so middle way consequence, right? What's their understanding of valid cognition? It's like you said, Caroline, right? And yeah. The only way of valid cognition here is you're an Arya, you're a poison on emptiness, right? The others are going, no, you don't need to be there. It's what our senses pick up. That's what's valid. So completely different understanding, fundamentally different understandings, isn't it? Yeah. So of course you can't have, it's like the picture shows, right? This is the idea. One guy's saying six, the other's going, no, it's nine, it's six, it's nine. It's like, yeah, right? We're looking at, there's no agreement here.
I think it's really good, Eddie, you making that, saying that there are two parts. It's the valid cognition and the nature of the object.
Yeah.
That you understand the two.
There's,
yeah.
There's two things there. Yeah. Okay. So then we have this next question. Why do the followers, basically, I just said, why do the followers of Baba Viveka disagree? Put this up here. Why, two pussycats up there? So a middle way autonomous, as you know, they disagree with Chandrakirtia and Lama Tsongkhapa. What's the primary disagreement about?
Just what we said, valid cognition, the nature of things, and also that then pours into how we use autonomous syllogisms for the middle way for the autonomy school, but the consequence school don't see them as valid.
Yeah, so this, again, this disagreement is really, it's sort of, there's a natural thing of conventional cognizers getting at conventional objects, and those objects appearing inherently existent, so they must be. That's the middle way autonomous point of view. And that's valid. But this, what's the question? Why do the followers of Baba Viveka disagree that a subject? Okay, what's the disagreement about here? What is the disagreement? It's related to the previous question, right? It says, why do Chandrakirtia and Lama Tsongkhapa assert that a subject cannot be commonly established by valid cognition? These guys go, we disagree. They're saying a subject can be commonly established by valid cognition. Huh? There's a fundamental disagreement right there. Huh? Why are they sort of saying this?
They're saying that if you're using autonomous syllogism, if you agree generally rather than specifically, then that's okay.
Yeah, but it really has to do about the debate. Because this commonly appearing subject, if the middle way consonants were to agree, then it would be a non-mistaken valid condition. But these other guys are saying to exist inherently. So for the middle way autonomous, a commonly appearing subject, it must be established. Because we're talking about the same thing. That's what they're saying. We're talking about the same thing. Middle way consonants are going, no, we're not. We're talking about two very different things, and we're talking about quite, our meanings of valid cognition are quite different too. And so for these debates to take place using autonomous syllogisms, it's really important for the middle way autonomy that there is a commonly appearing subject. And the middle way, of course, consequence cannot agree with that, can they? There's no way. Right? So that's why you have this disconnect here. But if one side seeing the six, the other side seeing nine, there's no connection there. So our next question is, when and why might the syllogism proving the appearance of sound be appropriate? Again, it's like we put it before, Caroline. We're just talking about the same thing, again, coming at it from different directions. So when and why might syllogistic proofs be appropriate? So Sue, how about you do the first part of like when they'd be appropriate?
When debating with non-Buddhists?
Excellent.
Establishing a commonly appearing subject for two autonomous going together.
Sure, yeah.
And also a syllogistic proof can also be appropriate for a two consequentialists going together, because it can it can overturn a wrong view, an unequivocally wrong holding after you've delivered a consequence.
This has all come from the AI, isn't it? That's very good.
No.
You're thinking, wow, very good. That's great. Three reasons. That's fantastic. Three wins. Far out. Okay, now, why might it be appropriate? Anybody else? Or Sue, if you like.
Well, in the first one, with the non-Buddhists, they say it can be appropriate because it comes down to using the generality of a subject, a predicate, and a reason, that you can churn them over from being permanent, sound as permanent to an impermanent. And it works as a proof because proofs work. You know, they're logically set out to do the job if everybody's got in common with valid cognition for the subject, the predicate, and the reason, it will do the job. Excellent. But they've got to be the same.
Okay. Chris, what did you have? It's a very good comprehensive
answer. I had two of the three. I did have the two consequentialists, Eddie, because that was in the material. It said, ideally, when one who has realized emptiness is explaining the concept of emptiness to the other who has not.
Okay.
That was one of the reasons it gave. I didn't have the two autonomists, for example.
Okay. Caroline?
I had very similar to that because it was sort of quite well set out in the text. So
Okay.
I had to battle with it a bit, just sort of, you know, yeah. But
okay, yeah. And Bruce?
Oh, similar to Chris, I just had that it does, the comparison does provide an opportunity to clarify the positions of autonomous and consequentialists.
Okay. So, in fact, so your answer is much more comprehensive than mine. I like that idea of the consequentialists debating together, and then, yeah, you could, of course, you're going to get, it's fine, you know. The simplest answer is this, when lower Buddhist schools debate with non-Buddhist opponents, but you can make it much more comprehensive as suited. That would be appropriate to use syllogisms. Like if two consequentialists are arguing, it's fine to use a syllogism, isn't it? They both know these syllogisms aren't autonomous. We're not agreeing with that, etc. And another time is when it's presented in a very general sense without any specific philosophical qualifications. Then it can work.
So, Eddie, I didn't quite understand what it meant in a general sense.
Okay. So when you might not qualify the phenomena that you're talking about. Yeah, so they things, so sometimes they have the same word, but the definition is different, like they define it slightly different. Right, so if you put that specific one in, then you're going to get a disagreement here straight off. But like, how might the phenomena be impermanent? Now, if you talk about that, and they said, so there's different ways of presenting this impermanence, then you could go, you'd have a disagreement. Or perhaps even the way that self existed, maybe.
Is it also to do with, like, if you disagree what sound is, like you say, specifically. Sound is a quality of space, so therefore it's permanent, or you can say that sound is a result of the coming together of elements. So if you hold that specifically, then you're coming from different points, where if you just say sound in general, you're not holding to the specifics.
That's a nice way of putting it, too. Yeah, so that's, I like that. We're probably not all that familiar with these different tenet systems, especially when you have tenet systems outside the Buddhist system. Right, so that's when you might have, if it's just generally put, you could have a debate. But if it's quite specific, then you're going to have to refute that specificity, first of all, aren't you? This is, why is it considered inappropriate in a debate between a middle way autonomist and a middle way consequentialist? What is it inappropriate? Again, we come back to the same thing we've been talking about before. It's like there's just no agreement here. There's no agreement on the valid cognition, and there's no agreement on the subject. So, there's a problem arising straight away. Middle way consciousness won't use these. They'll use syllogisms, but not when you, presuppose that the subjects of these debates inherently exist. So there's no meeting there. So this is why this type of syllogism is inappropriate for a middle way consequentialist. They will use them, but they use consequences. So let's do a quick meditation on this, and then we'll do our final part about the three modes of apprehension. So again, just get comfortable. You can let your eyes close if you like, and just allow your body to relax completely. Come back to your breath. Appreciate its natural rhythm. And with each exhalation, just gently release any tension. Now set an intention to explore the nature of reality for the benefit of all beings. So you'll be sitting there probably with your eyes closed. There's no objects of visual consciousness, but your ears are open. So try to apprehend any sounds. You might just tap the desk or something so you can actually hear a sound. And then notice how that impression seems to be solid or inherent. Especially if you, like I said, tap the desk or tap it, make a noise in front of you. Notice how the sense impression seems to have its own nature. Sound have its own character. Now notice how your mind can often mistake appearances for reality. We assume that the objects exist exactly as they appear to us. And this misperception leads to suffering when our expectations clash with the fluid nature of existence. It's like trying to measure water with a ruler. And a ruler is a valid tool for measuring solid objects, but it's meaningless when applied to a fluid. So we often apply incorrect frameworks to understand reality. So notice how your perceptions create a sense of own character in things around you. And consider how your mind might mistake the appearance of own character to be ultimately real. And take a moment to consider how it might seem to be to you. If you could see the empty nature of phenomena, how might that transform your way of being in the world? Could you practice looking beyond the appearance of own character? Recognizing the conventional validity of your perception while understanding it being ultimately empty. Just rest in the spaciousness of understanding. Just exhale and then now just let your eyes flutter open.
So Eddie?
Yes, yes.
Could I just ask a question? Could you go back one slide? And it's the sort of terminology here about establishing the subject in the same way, but yep. Isn't the valid cognition the kind of the subject in this case, and so it'd be the establishing the object?
It's subject in a syllogism, Carolyn. Subject, yes. Predicate, and reason.
Oh, right. In a syllogism. Oh, okay, right. Yes, righto. I knew that'd be a good explanation. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah. So Chris, again, you know, we were talking before, Chris, from the middle way autonomous agree that phenomena are ultimately empty, but they conventionally inherently exist. So in terms of ultimate truth, yeah, they're empty. All phenomena are empty of this intrinsic nature, but conventionally they have intrinsic nature. Middle way consequences go both sides. No, that doesn't make sense. If the phenomena conventionally has inherent existence, you'd be able to find it. It would appear to you when you did the ultimate. So this is a major, again, there's this thing, it's, they're sort of halfway, they're nearly there on the middle way consequence, but they're not. You know, and the reason for this is to say, look, if they didn't have this conventional inherent existence, they wouldn't exist at all. You know, so they're sort of conflating nothing with, I don't know what. Anyway, let's go back and have a look at this. So the three modes of apprehension. So I've written them out slightly differently than how they are presented in the text, but you guys should all know them. What's the first mode of apprehension that you've come up with, Sue?
Apprehended as existing inherently, which is equivalent to grasping at true existence.
So this apprehending phenomena have a true existence, existing truly or inherently, right? Chris, what's another way of apprehending them?
Yeah, the second one is apprehending it as existing in a false way, so an object lacks essential existence, but exists like an illusion.
Okay,
and this only happens after you have realized emptiness.
Okay, which leaves the last one, which is called what, Bruce?
Existing in general without specifying.
Existing in general or having a mere existence. Yep. And so what does that mean, Caroline?
The last one?
Yeah, just merely existing or existing in general.
It's sort of like how in conventional reality we don't grasp at something as inherently existing. We merely let it exist without analysing it or without grasping it.
Excellent. That's good. Yeah. So in the text, they come up quite differently the way I wrote it, but it's just a different order, that's all. So this mere existence or generally existing. Existing in general without specifying that it is essentially existing or not existing at all. Right? So there's no philosophy involved here. It's just, well, it exists, right? Here it is. Then true existence or inherent existence, apprehending something as existing inherently. In other words, grasping at the true existence. And finally is this false existence. The knowledge arising after realizing emptiness, phenomena having an illusion-like existence. Now, the next question was, which two do we possess? Caroline. Your little thing got switched off again, Caroline, your microphone.
Right. We have the grasping at inherently existing,
yep.
And we have merely existing.
Yep, that's right, merely existing. So again, I went through the way it was all written and tried to include different ways of saying it again, you know. So there's just no analysis done. But we don't analyse it, it's just existing in general. There it is. Right? My eyes apprehend it, my mind apprehends it, right? It exists. That's it. We're not looking to see whether it truly exists or it inherently exists or it doesn't exist at all. There's no analysis going on. I found this quite a little bit sort of confusing, but yeah, sometimes when they use it like mere existence, you think, well, that's a middle way consequence thing, eh? Right? And it doesn't mean that. but you know, the context has changed, I guess. We're really looking here at phenomena, conventionalities, aren't we? And then truly existing and apprehending something as inherently existing. Then the question is, how can we develop the third mode, which was, what was the third mode, the other mode? You've got mere existence, true existence, and...
After realising emptiness.
Yeah, that's right. False existence. The knowledge arising after realising emptiness. The phenomena appearing to us falsely. So any ideas? Sue, you go first.
Merit and wisdom.
I'm sorry?
Develop merit and wisdom.
Okay, great. That's it. That's good. That's good enough. That covers it all. That's right. We need both to do this. Chris.
Yeah, just follow the Buddhist path.
Okay. Bruce.
I mentioned specifically focus on dependent arising.
Yeah, that's another great answer. Yeah, Caroline?
Get onto the path of seeing.
Okay, get on the path of seeing. Well, I'm not sure if I think it said in the text that mentioned it. So I just put down, like, you have to study the middle way. You have to reflect on dependent and empty. And then you meditate on like an illusion. But all your answers are correct. So that's fine.
But with that one, any, you know, like an illusion, like there are, as you said in the Diamond Cutter Sutra with its nine analogies, like it's sort of also picking the analogy that works for your mind best.
Yeah, and, that's right.
You know, like an illusion, you know, doesn't, you know, having seen a mirage, then, you know, that one's sort of more meaningful for me.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah, I've seen, like, you know, you guys might have too. Like, even when you go on long journeys in a car and if the highway's long enough, you can look out there and it looks like there's a puddle of water on the road. I don't know if you've seen that, but I have. It looks like, shit, I'm driving towards, there's like a lake of water on the road or something up ahead. Of course, it's not. You know, it's just a reflection, isn't it? It's an illusion. Like a mirage, these sort of things. I also like the one of, like a reflection. You know, like you stand in front of the mirror, it looks like you're in the mirror, but you're not. So I like that one for thinking like, yeah, it looks like, it feels like there's a real self inside me, just that it looks like I'm in the mirror. But there is no real substantial self inside me. And it's the same with feelings. Now, it's also a very good one there. Of course, we have feelings, but they don't exist self-sufficiently or substantially or intrinsically or any of those things. But yet it appears that way, doesn't it? Now, this next question about all conceptual thought grasping is, does all conceptual thought grasp an inherent existence, and why does it, or why does it not? So what's the first part of the answer? Does it do it or not do it? Caroline, okay.
It goes back to the mere existing. And so if things merely exist, then, you know, conceptual thought doesn't need to grasp that mere existence.
Yeah, good answer. That's right. It just shows you right back there, wasn't it? Good. There's a part where we just go, no, mere existence, not analysing, grasping, anything. It's just appearing. Bruce? Is it their first answer, yes or no?
Look, I really struggle with this, but what Carol said makes perfect sense.
Yeah, it's nice, eh? Yeah. Chris?
I had yes, because conceptual thought rarefies phenomena. Okay. The realization of emptiness must be non-conceptual. It must be a direct conceptual realization of emptiness as conceptually even subtle, even because as concepts even subtly grasp but inherent existence.
Yeah. Okie dokie. Suzanne, Susie, Sue.
Eddie, I had that it depends, and also that mainly in an ordinary sentient being, conceptual thought is influenced by ignorance, so therefore it does grasp. But if somebody's had a perceptual realization of emptiness and equipoise, when they come out of it, they're not influenced by that conception, so it doesn't look that way. Well, they don't. They might look that way, but they don't grasp at it.
Right. Yeah. Well, the simplest is like you're saying, Carlo. This was demonstrated before in these three modes of existence. But without that analysis, the phenomena are just merely appearing. But on page 40, it says, so first of all, the first part of the answer is no. It's not the case. So I've got a couple of reasons here, and like I said, it comes from the commentary on page 40. If this were the case, it would be impossible for the middle way to accept the conventional objects posited by ordinary consciousnesses. And secondly, it would create a breakdown in understanding the middle way. And on page 40, it says, look, this distinction is important. Because if all conceptual thought did grasp at inherent existence, it would be impossible for the middle way to accept the conventional objects posited by ordinary consciousnesses, and it would create a breakdown in understanding the middle way. But this answer comes from what Caroline said. It says, living beings have not yet developed the view of emptiness, possess the first and second modes, apprehending mere existence and true existence. So it's incorrect to claim that before realizing emptiness, any conception of existence is necessarily a conception of true existence.
Anything.
Therefore, not all conceptual thought grasps at inherent existence. Some conceptual thought apprehends a mere existence without inherent nature.
And is that almost like when you're trying to practice calm abiding or trying to rest in awareness?
Yes, and
you're resting in this subjective aspect of awareness and you're just watching conception, you're not grasping
that's
at it.
Right. That's right.
Yeah,
that's right. You watch them come and you watch them go, but there's no grasping at it. Yeah, that's right.
That's a good example, thanks, Sue. Yeah, it is like that.
Now, where have I heard that before? Okay. Anything interesting about this? I mean, this last little bit's a bit tricky, I thought, but anyway. Last meditation, folks. So again, just get adjust your posture. So I think it's out of compassion we are studying. We wish to put an end to our own suffering and we want to help others do the same. To do that, we need to know about reality and the discrepancy between appearances and existence. So bring to mind an ordinary object. Just think of something ordinary. And then recollect that there are three ways you could apprehend the existence of this object. So let's go the easy way. The first way is like just apprehending the object. There's no judgments being made. This is very much like just looking at a reflection in a mirror and thinking nothing of it. It just appears. Now, the second way is to grasp at the true existence of that object. In other words, you believe the object possesses an intrinsic or own character. Something about this object, something that makes it what it is. And the last way is seeing the object after you've realized its empty nature. So imagine how the object would appear to you then. Be like a mirage or like an illusion. So I wonder how our experiences might change if we could release the need to grasp at objects as having their own character. Now, are there conventional objects in daily life that you typically apprehend without analysing their nature, simply accepting their mere existence? Now, I wonder how viewing phenomena as mirror-like reflections or illusions or mirages. How about seeing phenomena like that, like a mirage, like an illusion, like a reflection? They're undeniably appearing. If they don't have the true existence they seem to have. How might that transform our own relationship with our own suffering? If we looked at our own suffering to be like a mirage, like a reflection, like a dream, like an illusion. They just rest the mind in apprehending mere existence. Come back to the breath. The body is breathing itself. It's merely existing. You're neither affirming own character, nor are you denying the conventional appearances. The body just breathes itself and there is awareness. Next time you exhale, feel completely at ease and relax and just let your eyes flutter open. And just bring your attention back to where you are. Okay, so there's quite a few questions from this class, but we've done like half of them. I'll send out the next lot. Sue, I'll send them out to you if that's okay.
Yeah, and that's fine, Eddie.
Send them out to
everybody,
email. Yeah. And that way I'll know it gets out there. Okay. So next week, here's the material that we'll be discussing. So it's the same class, but just the other part of it. And the last of the questions to do with it. And the material, of course, is in these pages here. You see 10 pages in volume 3 of Lamrim Chenmo, 259-269. And if you have Geshe Sopa's book, it's 387-408, 21 odd pages, and 10 or 11 pages in the commentary. Okay, so let's dedicate. So we've been doing this for the sake of all sentient beings, and we're trying to understand reality to diminish our own suffering and finally get rid of it altogether, at the same time develop all of our good qualities. We want to share this knowledge with everyone and the methods that come with the knowledge. To think that it's only through the kindness of our own teachers, through Geshe Tashi Tsering in particular, but also from the books that His Holiness has written, that Geshe Sopa has written, and many others. It's only depends on their kindness that we're getting some sort of understanding of the two truths. So I think that it's due to the merits of these virtuous actions may I quickly attain the state of a Guru Buddha and lead all living beings without exception into that enlightened state. May the supreme jewel, Bodhicitta, not yet born arise and grow. May that born have no decline but increase forevermore. And as long as space remains, as long as sentient beings remain, may I too remain to dispel the sorrows of the world. And for the long life of His Holiness, the wish-granting, wish-fulfilling jewel, the source of every single benefit and happiness in this world, to the incomparably kind Tenzin Gyatso, I beseech, may all your holy wishes be spontaneously fulfilled. And then for finding the reincarnation of Rinpoche, in holding and spreading the Muni's precious and complete teachings through explanation and practice, you wore the armor of patience that is never discouraged. Incomparable Venerable Guru, to you I make this request.